offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Sai Prakash. We welcome you to this episode where we're going to begin the next discourse. We completed the first discourse in the last week, the discourse entitled The End of Education as Character. And for those of you who have not been following our series, we are going through the 1991 summer course series. We've completed the first discourse and we're going to begin the second one, as I just mentioned. So before we dwell into the second discourse, probably to talk a few minutes about the first discourse itself, and for the rest of the program, I invite Sai Prakash. Sairam Sai Prakash.
Sairam Prem. Yes, this is the beginning of the second discourse, and as we discussed in the previous episodes, the first discourse itself was power-packed, and there were many points that were so emphatic and so powerful. You know, there are many things which Swami says which are of a spiritual nature, and they kind of leave you with a feeling that maybe I have a choice whether to take to it or not. But the points that Swami brought out in the first discourse very clearly defines what a good character is and what a student ought to do and have.
Right. A lot of that first discourse was Swami was raising his grouse against the system itself.
Right.
You know, about the students, more about the teachers and the administrators, how the very purpose of education is being lost. And I think right now we are seeing that with a lot of commotion happening in the universities in India.
Right.
You know, we can see that it basically is, you know, the students failing to understand what the purpose of education is, as Swami would say it. In fact, our chancellor, Justice Venkatachalaya, was telling in that conversation.
Yes.
He came across one university which has not had a convocation for 17 years because of the unrest amongst the students and teachers. So think of it. How many years? I think it's about 30 years now, our university.
Yeah.
I think it's never missed a convocation.
That's right.
Every time it's on 22nd November. And that's something which is tremendous. And it's purely because of, you know, definitely the love that Swami showered, that should be the first reason. And the ability Swami had, you know, shouldn't be calling it the ability, but the way Swami inspired love in students and the teacher's heart towards him. And also this very point which we are making, the first discourse, where Swami infused that purpose behind this persuasion, I mean, our attempt to learn something or to acquire knowledge.
Very true. In fact, this aspect of humility which Swami says, education bestows you with humility. It's so important because when we see, you know, people in different fields, people with half knowledge are always very pompous. But then when there is this famous saying of, if the pot is full, then it doesn't shake. So in the similar way, people with complete knowledge and understanding are very humble and absolutely live in the moment. And, you know, that is one thing you see with Swami, because on the stage here is Bhagwan, who has given you the entire, he was expounding the secrets of the Upanishads, for example, on this series. And he would just come down and start speaking to you about what breakfast you had. Absolutely one with everybody. You know, he showed us the right mix of how we should behave and how we should be. Having the complete knowledge and understanding on one hand, at the same time, leading a purposeful and, accessible life.
Coming to think of it, the discourse we're going to come to now is so complicated. And if you, I mean, just going by going back to what you were saying about how Swami would come down after discourse and, you know, become so accessible and one with us.
Yes.
Reminded of one of the old students narrating that this boy had finished his BSc.
Okay.
And Swami wanted him to go and pursue his medicine. I think it must be one of your seniors.
Okay.
And this boy was very upset because he said, Swami is trying to send me away.
Okay.
Because I think his parents wanted him to become a doctor or something. So Swami told him, see, this is the right age. After BSc, you go and pursue your MBBS.
Mm-hmm.
So this boy used to play harmonium during bhajans.
Okay.
So he was so upset that Swami is sending him away, that the entire bhajan session he would sit and play the harmonium but not look at Swami.
Okay.
And Swami would come and sit on the throne and all the time try to catch this boy's attention.
Okay.
You know, trying to patch up in a sense. And this was going on for so much. I mean, just come to think of it, here is Swami who was, you know, who could stand on a pedestal and give wisdom which was unmatched.
Right.
And definitely, I mean, he is the, as we always say, the chancellor of the universe. But at the same time, an ordinary student in that university could, you know, could have a fight like this with him, a personal tiff with him. Mm. And Swami was trying to, you know, patch up. And I really don't know how he managed to make
really,
a balance.
Really, the balance is so fine. And, you know, it may take time to wink your eyelid, but Swami is gone from here to there in a second. And the divine aspect and the human aspect, you can't say one ended and the other started. They both were there together. If you were to define it in quantum physics principles, the probability of either human nature or the divine nature, they exist, they coexisted, they were just there.
Right. I mean, it reminds me of, I think, the Kodai trip which you were part of.
Okay.
When Swami was trying to measure his height with one of the youngsters.
Exactly, exactly.
That was a very sweet incident, right?
Very sweet incident. But at that moment, see, he said, who is taller?
He
me or
picked up one of the shortest students, right?
Yeah. Okay. And then we were in a fix, Swami, whether Swami wants to be taller or Swami wants to be shorter.
So Swami then stood side by side.
Swami told him, stand, come, stand next to me.
Okay.
And then, so Swami is asking, tell me who is taller. So we were looking at each other and hesitating, and then some people made bold to say, Swami, you are only taller. Then some told, no, Swami, he is, then final conclusion is, Swami, if you measure without the hair, then he is taller. But with hair, you are taller, Swami. All wrong answers, wrong answers, wrong. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. I'm shorter than the shortest, taller than the tallest, bigger than the big. At that moment, one, you know, like a shock wave, like a gravitational wave that came out. One shock wave just went, whom are we living with? You know, that suddenly puts you in. You know, another incident which happened around the same time.
Okay.
Swami was sitting and talking to all of us. And suddenly he looked at one of the boys. Just now, what did you think? Just now.
Mm.
And that boy smiled and Swami said, just now you thought how nice it is that Swami is sitting and talking to all of us. I want to stay with you all the time. I want to stay with you all through my life. Did you not think that just now? Then he said, yes, Swami. He just once in a while just shows us, you know, a small glimpse. I mean, if scientists today are able to measure a gravitational wave which happened 1.3 billion years back, the size of the amplitude of the wave is 1/1000th of the diameter of a proton, which is something like a 1 femtometer, which is like 10 to the power of minus 15.
Right.
I mean, man has reached that level, and all that looks like nothing in front of Swami.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, very true. You know, here is, you're talking about a billion years. If you come to think of it, 13.7, that's the number they say, 13.7 billion years ago, the Big Bang happened.
Right, right.
And Swami says that God, the discourse we're going to come to is about that. Swami says, you know, the when God came and from God what came.
Yes.
And it took so many billion years for man to come. And Swami is standing in front of us face to face and saying, you and I are one.
Right.
You are divine. Do you realize that?
Hmm.
And you know, we rejoice at invention or discovery like what you said,
yeah,
which definitely, which is worth celebrating, you know, lifetimes of effort has gone into it, but we are capable of much more. We are, Swami would say, Amrutasya Putra, you actually inherit much more than what, you know, just this mere scientific thinking.
Very true. In fact, it's like when Swami says, head in the forest, hand in the society, having that complete understanding and that experience of what we actually are, how we lead your life in day-to-day existence. I mean, in a sense, it may not be in its entirety, but that's what even Aurobindo, Sri Aurobindo wrote in his Integral Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
He says, achieving that kind of unity is one aspect of life. But having achieved that, what do? Coming back and living, being a part of society and passionately living, that is the important part. Just living your life, being tossed with joys and sorrows is one way of life. But then having the deeper understanding and coming back, that is what we ought to be doing.
Very true. You know, when we were working on an article for the Sankranti,
okay,
we were reading about how the Prashanta Nilaya Mandir was built, the current Mandir in the 1950s it was built. Yeah. You know, Swami would take a towel and tie it around his head,
mm-hmm,
and he would join the workers in carrying the bricks.
Really?
And this one. And at the end of the day, you know, he would give the wages to the workers who had to be paid every day. Swami would serve water. To think of it, you know, here is, I mean, when you said that to come back into the world and work passionately.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that passion? What was that drive which Swami had? My God.
At the same time, it's a selfless drive.
Right.
He doesn't want anything. The body is there. It has to do work. So it does work. And it does work which is beneficial to all mankind. At the same time, it expects nothing. That's the spirit, the complete spirit of work.
And just like how Professor Nanjundia would say, he once asked Swami, you know,
mm-hmm,
he said, Swami, are you always God, or do you, you know, get into that God mode whenever you want and come out of it? You know, and Swami said, no, I'm always God. Even when I appear like I'm not behaving like God, or I'm asking you questions as though I don't know, don't get fooled by it. I'm always God. There is never a moment I'm not in that state. Oh, we'll go into this discourse, the second discourse, and it's named The Vedic Heritage of India. It's very interesting to note that, because Swami spoke about how, you know, education is losing its way, how science is actually incomplete. But in this discourse, Swami starts about how man started thinking and wondering, you know, looking around and wondering, asking questions and searching for answers, and, you know, found a few answers, was not satisfied, asked more questions. It's a very, very interesting journey. So we'll go into that discourse.
In a strange way,
right?
I think one of the last two discourses, last discourse was last but one,
mm-hmm,
of the 1990 series was the Vedic heritage.
Right.
So there seems to be some kind of a continuity between that series and this series, because that's where Swami stopped off in the 1990. After all the, you know, you are not the body, the senses, the mind, the buddhi, the Atman, you are the Atman. Then he says, what is the Vedic wisdom? I think that was the name of the title there. Then now he just gives an introduction on education, and he starts where he left, the Vedic heritage.
It's a very, very interesting discourse, because Swami brings out the scientific way in which people went about looking for God.
Okay. We're
talking about science. Of course, that's not going to come till probably next week. But nevertheless, let's begin this discourse.
వెలుగొందుచుండును విశ్వమందు విభుడు వెలుగొందుచుండును విపునియందు విశ్వమెలుగుచుండు విశ్వ విపుల మైత్రీ విశ్వ విపుల మైత్రీ విడతీయరానిది విశ్వ విపుల మైత్రీ విడతీయరానిది సత్యమైన బాట సాయి మాట సత్యమైన బాట సత్యమైన బాట సాయి మాట
ఇన్ ది వరల్డ్ ది క్రియేటర్ ద లార్డ్ లివ్స్ అండ్ షైన్స్ ఫోర్త్ అండ్ ఇన్ ద లార్డ్ ఈస్ ది ఎంటైర్ క్రియేటెడ్ వరల్డ్ shining forth. The friendship between the Lord, Creator, and the created world it cannot be separated. This is the world of Sai, the path of truth.
Isha vasyam idam jagat. ఈ జగత్తు ఈశ్వరుడు నివసించదగినటువంటిది.
దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ ఎ ప్లేస్ వేర్ గాడ్ డ్వెల్స్.
జగత్తు అనగా మనము పుట్టి పెరిగి తిరిగి పోయేటువంటి లోకం.
వెన్ యూ సే ది వరల్డ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ ప్లేస్ యూ టేక్ బర్త్ లివ్ అండ్ లీవ్ ది ప్లేస్.
ఈ లోకమునకు ఆధారము భూమి.
ది బేసిస్ ఫర్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ అర్త్.
ఎడతెరప లేకుండా ఇంట బయట సర్వత్ర సర్వకాలములు యందు కూడాను గాలి వీచుచున్నది.
వితౌట్ ఎనీ రెస్ట్ విండ్ బ్లోస్ సీజ్లెస్లీ ఇన్సైడ్ అండ్ అవుట్ సైడ్ ఆఫ్ ద హోమ్ ఎవ్రీవే అండ్ అట్ ఆల్ టైమ్స్.
కానీ ఇది మానవులకు కనిపించదు.
బట్ దిస్ ఇస్ నాట్ విజిబుల్ ఫర్ మ్యాన్.
పగలు వెలుతురు
లైట్ డ్యూరింగ్ ద డే.
కార్యకలాపములు ఆహార విహారములు జరుగుతూ ఉంటాయి.
ది డైలీ రొటీన్ వర్క్ అండ్ ది వరల్డ్లీ activity will be going on.
రాత్రి కాగానే ప్రకృతి నిశ్శబ్దముగా నిద్రిస్తుంది.
As soon as night sets in, nature comes to dead stop and sleeps comfortably.
మానవుడు పగలు వెలుతురు.
Man sees light during the day.
Ratri chikati.
During the night, darkness.
Ee velturuku chikati ki madhyanunna sambandha bandhavyanni manavudu gurtinchadam atyavasaram.
The relationship that exists between this light and the darkness has to be recognized.
Manavudu tala etti paiki chuchinappudu ananta aakashamulo ప్రకాశిస్తుండేటువంటి యొక్క సూర్యుడు దేదీప్యమానంగా కనిపిస్తుంటాడు.
When man looks up and looks into the sky, he finds the resplendent glowing sun shining forth.
అంతులేని ఆకాశమును అనంత ప్రకాశంతో ప్రకాశించేటువంటి సూర్యుడు ఒక్కడే.
In the infinite space, it is the sun alone who shines most gloriously.
ప్రతి క్షణము కూడాను ఈ జగత్తునందు ఏదో కొన్ని రకములైనటువంటి కర్మలు సరుపుతూనే ఉంటున్నాయి.
ఎవ్రీ మూమెంట్ ఆఫ్ ద డే సమ్ యాక్టివిటీ ఆర్ ది అదర్ ఈజ్ బీయింగ్ క్యారీడ్ ఆన్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్.
పుణ్యములు పురుషార్థములు
మెరిటోరియస్ వర్క్ అండ్ డ్యూటీస్
సావులు పుట్టుకలు
birth and death
పెళ్లి పేరెంటాలు
మ్యారేజ్ అండ్ అదర్
సెలబ్రేషన్ నిర్విరామము లేకుండా జరుగుతూ జీవితము నవ్వులతో ఏడ్పులతో ముగిసిపోతుంటాయి.
సీజ్లెస్లీ దిస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ యాక్టివిటీ ఈస్ బీయింగ్ క్యారీడ్ ఆన్ అండ్ మ్యాన్ స్పెండ్స్ హిస్ లైఫ్ లాఫింగ్ సమ్ టైమ్స్ అండ్ వీపింగ్ అదర్ టైమ్స్.
దీనికి అంతమే లేదు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నో ఎండ్ టు దిస్.
మానవుడు పుట్టుగానే కేవలము ఆకలి అతని వెంటాడుతుంది.
ది మోమెంట్ మ్యాన్ ఇస్ బోర్న్ హంగర్ హాంట్స్ హిమ్.
నాభినాళమును మనము దానిని తృంచగానే బిడ్డ కేవు కేవుమని ఏడుస్తుంది.
ది మోమెంట్ ది చైల్డ్ ఇస్ బోర్న్ హి స్టార్ట్స్ క్రయింగ్ దట్ ఐ వాంట్ ఫుడ్.
ఏ తేను ఏ గ్లూకోస్ ఏ పాలు నాలుగుకు రాసినప్పుడు ఆ ఏడుపు చల్లారుతుంది.
వెన్ ఎయిదర్ హనీ మిల్క్ ఆర్ గ్లూకోస్ ఈజ్ గివన్ ది చైల్డ్ స్టాప్స్ క్రైయింగ్.
మొట్టమొదట మానవుని పీడించేటువంటిది ఆకలి.
The first thing that haunts man after birth is hunger.
ఈ ఆకలికి ధాన్యము అత్యవసరం.
To satisfy hunger, food is required.
ఈ ధాన్యము కేవలము నీటి ద్వారానే మనకు లభ్యమవుతుంది, కానీ మరొక మార్గంలో మనకు లభ్యము కాదు.
Grain you can raise through water and through nothing else.
ఎన్ని యంత్రములు ఎన్ని తంత్రములు కనిపెట్టినప్పటికీ ఆకలి తీర్చినది అన్నమే, కాని యంత్రములు తంత్రములు కాదు.
యు మే ఫైండ్ అవుట్ అండ్ డిస్కవర్ ఎనీ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ మెషిన్స్ ఆర్ ఎనీ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ ఇన్స్ట్రుమెంట్స్, బట్ దట్ కెన్ నెవర్ సాటిస్ఫై ది హంగర్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్.
భూమి నీళ్లను త్రాగి మానవులకు ధాన్యం అందిస్తున్నది.
ఆర్ ఆఫ్టర్ గెటింగ్ వాటర్ కెన్ సప్లై ది గ్రెయిన్.
ఈ విధంగా ఆహార విహారములు అభివృద్ధి కాగానే మానవ యొక్క జనాభా కూడాను దినదినములకు పెరుగుతూ వచ్చింది.
గ్రాడ్యువలీ ది పాపులేషన్ మల్టిప్లైస్ అండ్ ఇంక్రీజెస్.
దీని తరువాత పాడి పంటలు,
ఆఫ్టర్ దిస్ అగ్రికల్చర్
గుడిసెలు, ఇండ్లు, పల్లెలు, పట్టణాలు పెరుగుతూ వచ్చాయి.
కన్స్ట్రక్షన్ ఆఫ్ హౌసెస్, ఫార్మేషన్ ఆఫ్ విలేజెస్, సిటీస్ ఎట్సెట్రా హ్యాస్ స్టార్టెడ్.
ఈ విధంగానే మానవ జీవితము దినదినాభివృద్ధి చెందుతూ తమ జీవితములకు అవసరమైనటువంటి దానిని చక్కగా అర్థం చేసుకుంటూ వచ్చింది.
Thus, gradually man has developed to understand the needs of life and provided for them.
తమ నిత్య జీవితములకు అవసరమైనటువంటి వాటిని ప్రోగు చేసుకుంటూ వచ్చింది.
He started collecting and accumulating things required for his day-to-day living.
కొన్ని రహస్యములను కూడా గుర్తించుకుంటూ వచ్చింది మానవత్వం.
Humanity began realizing certain secrets and subtleties required for man.
ఇంతియే కాక తమకు తెలియనటువంటి కూడాను అనేకంగా ఉన్నవని కూడాను గుర్తించుకుంటూ వచ్చింది.
Humanity also realized that there are so many things which it cannot know, it doesn't know.
మనము తెలుసుకున్నది తక్కువ, తెలుసుకోవాల్సింది ఎక్కువ అని కూడాను అర్థం చేసుకుంది మానవత్వం.
Humanity also realized that what it knows is very limited compared to what it has to know, which is unlimited.
మానవుడు భూమిని చేయలేడు.
Man cannot create land or earth.
మానవుడు నీటిని సృష్టించలేడు.
Man cannot create water either.
కొమ్మకు కొమ్మకు రాపిడి జరిగినప్పుడు అగ్నిని కలుగుతున్నదే, కాని కొమ్మలో అగ్నిని పెట్టి నిలబెట్టలేడు.
When there is a rupture between one branch and another, the fire emanates, but the fire cannot be put into the branch itself.
ఇది మానవుని చేత కానటువంటి పని.
This is impossible for man to achieve.
కొమ్మలో అగ్ని ఉన్నది, కాని ఆ అగ్ని కొమ్మను కాల్చకుండా కాపాడుకుంటున్నది.
There is fire in wood, but wood takes care to see that it doesn't burn itself.
ఆ పనిని మానవుడు చేయలేడు.
This cannot be done by man.
కనుక ఈ విధంగా మనకు కంటికి కనిపించక, చెవులకు వినిపించక, మనసుకు అనిపించక, ఏదో ఒక విధమైన శక్తి అంతర్భూతమై ఉన్నది అని కొంతవరకు గుర్తించుకుంటూ వచ్చాడు మానవుడు.
మ్యాన్ గ్రాడ్యువలీ బిగాన్ టు రియలైజ్ దట్ దేర్ ఈజ్ ఎ పవర్ విచ్ ఈజ్ నాట్ విజిబుల్ ఫర్ ది ఐ, విచ్ కెనాట్ బి హర్డ్ బై ది ఇయర్ అండ్ విచ్ కెనాట్ బి ఈవెన్ ఫెల్ట్ బై ది మైండ్.
దట్ వాస్ ది ఫస్ట్ క్లిప్ ఇన్ దట్ డిస్కోర్స్. You can't help but notice the, you know, the pace with which Swami starts in this particular discourse. There's so much of gravity in the delivery itself.
Yeah, there is a deliberate pause, and there is, I would say, a purposeful brevity in his sentences, because these are all, each statement is a fact. Each statement is a fact, and this is the ultimate fact. Like, this is what it is. This is what man can do. This is what he has done. This is what he cannot. That's how it has been.
And like, just as we spoke about the first discourse, you know, the discourse itself is a summary of what is to come. The Padyam here is like a summary of what is to come, you know.
Exactly.
Swami starting about, talking about how man goes about using nature to feed himself, and then started exploring. But the Padyam starts with what probably man, you know, ought to find, or what eventually the best of men found.
Mm-hmm.
The creator shines within the universe. Right. The universe is reflected in the creator.
Right.
And what a beautiful statement. God and creation are eternally bound as friends.
Right.
Beautiful.
In fact, you can't help but quoting that Dakshinamurti Stotram, which starts with Vishwam Darpana Darpamana Hridayam. Mm-hmm. He says the whole universe is reflected as if in a mirror. And that's exactly how that stotram starts.
Right.
And as that stotram goes, it takes you to the reality and the truth that God and the universe are one. So that's exactly summarized in this poem.
Right. Then of course, I think Swami speaks about the initial, probably what must have been going on in man's mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way the man looks at day and night,
mm-hmm.
the way he looks at nature and wonders, you know, there is that silence in the night Swami speaks about. Then Swami speaks about how, in a sense, the unstoppable nature of time. You know, the routines go on and on.
Mm.
You know, you vacillate between joy and sorrow. It's a ceaseless routine. And then Swami speaks about childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know where Swami said it in a discourse or something, but Swami would very often make a reference to this, that when the child is born, you know, that whole process when it first comes to earth, it's very similar to the very beginning itself.
Is it?
The lot of things. One of the things that Swami spoke about is how the various forms the fetus takes within the human body,
yes, that
is similar to evolution and very similar to Dashavataram also.
Right.
So many times Swami would say that. I think in Premavaini Swami says the entire day of a man is very similar to the day of the Lord.
Okay.
You know, ending with Pralaya and then again beginning with creation.
Mm.
So I think probably Swami is hinting at a similarity between that.
Okay.
You know, how when you're born, there is that need for food.
Mm.
Where the need for food turns to outside. You know, I think the need for food is always there, even when in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no lag between the need and the satiation there.
Mm.
But then when the umbilical cord is cut, then Swami says that the child starts crying. Probably the desire to know or the desire to achieve starts from there. No, what was already yours, now you're beginning to search for it.
You know, when Swami is talking about the sun, the moon, the day, the night, and all these things, and how beautifully he describes, basically looking at them, it is the prakriti, it's nature, and it is that aspect of creation. You know, Swami, I think in one of his discourses quoted, I mean, Swami narrated this story, from the Ramayana.
Okay.
See, the Ramayana itself is very symbolic. I mean, everything is at the Atma Ramayana, as Swami, as you have been discussing the Ramkatha Rasvahini. It's a divine play, and it's so similar to all our lives. There, I believe, at the end of the war, when they all came back and Rama was distributing gifts to everybody, Hanuman said, "I don't want all this. I don't want this gift. I want to know the mystery of your life." What is the mystery of your life? I want to know why all this happened. What made this happen? And then Lord Rama looked at Mother Sita and said, "You answer his question."
Right. I think, I don't know, it's one of the discourses Swami mentions that.
Okay.
That time, apparently Lord Rama says that, "I can't speak about it."
Oh, is it?
He says, "I can't speak about it."
Mm.
The only person who has the authority to speak about it is Mother Sita.
Mm.
Because the whole thing was her play.
Her play.
He's saying, "I was only a witness. Whatever you saw about, you know, the going away to the forest, the killing of Ravana, Ravana's abduction, and then again Mother Sita being sent away, it's all Sita's play.
Oh.
Rama, who is the Atma, is always only the witness."
He is just the witness. So she says, "I am the Mula Prakriti, I am the Maya, and I am the one who has brought about this variety, this this duality, this all these happenings. I have brought it about to bring teach a lesson." So, you know, the nature is like the vesture that God wears. And in a sense, it is trying to define the indefinable. So when there is a manifestation of the unmanifest, then you get into trying to describe him. There are points of description, there are qualities, there is limitations, there is beauty, everything comes into play.
Right. It reminds me of what we study in science. This LPG gas which we use at home,
yeah,
you know, liquefied petroleum gas.
Mm-hmm.
We often know that, you know, when we don't close the faucet properly,
yes,
you have a gas leak and you have a smell.
Yes.
But I think in my 10th standard, I remember coming across this fact.
Mm-hmm.
The LPG gas actually does not have any smell at all.
Is it?
It is an odorless gas.
Then?
Right. So, because to avoid any accidents which would be caused due to a leak,
yes,
they add a substance to the liquefied petroleum gas. I think okay. It's called ethyl mercaptan or something.
Okay.
That gives that smell.
Okay.
But in usage, see, we've got so used to it, so we think that I'm getting the smell of gas. You know, you've added something to define something, as you said, which is actually not definable through the sense of smell.
Correct.
It's literally like that, and over a period of time, we think that this is a quality of that.
Right, and once we define the gas with its attributes, we define the food it cooks as well. So, here, in such a measured way, Swami starts, and he gives all the various aspects of nature, and then comes this master statement. He says, you may have lot of technology and machines, but can they satisfy your hunger? And you're born with hunger. Hunger drives you. And you may have technology, but technology cannot satisfy. Man cannot make the earth. Man cannot make water. Man cannot make food. Water makes food. The earth accepts the water and gives you food and grain. How beautiful it is.
And it's really, it's a wonder, you know, how deep something as simple as hunger and food actually even reflects in our mind. You know, even if we take the time to observe people around,
yes,
the way they would behave before dinner, after dinner, you know, before when they are hungry,
right.
And you know, when Swami Vivekananda says that you can't teach spirituality to a hungry man, it's so true, because your perception itself is so different, your mood, your receptiveness is so different when you don't have the hunger, or when you're, you know, your mind is cleared of that hunger. And when Swami says that, you know, you have not found a way to release yourself from hunger and thirst.
In fact, you know, a slight digression at this point, one of the old devotees of Swami said that he was keenly observing, and he realized that Swami never had any hunger. In the sense that Swami would never say that, okay, let us go for food, this, that. Because somebody would say, Swami, the lunch is ready or the food is ready. It's like you inviting him to come and have food. And then he says, okay, I'll come because you want me to have it. That kind means that was the spirit in which he led his everyday life. Because, you know, having the conviction that you are not fostered by the food you eat, and living it actually are two different things actually.
Right. It's a classic image which stays in front of our eyes, you know. In Thrai Brindavan, Swami would stand and give discourse. If you offer water to him in his glass, Swami would dip his finger. he won't drink water. He would dip his finger and, you know, just put it in his mouth.
Just to make you happy.
Just to make us happy. The beautiful sights they were. Then, of course, what a wonderful thing that Swami is mentioning here, you know, about fire. That when two branches of a tree rub each other, there is fire.
Correct.
The fire was always inside. It was never introduced from outside.
Yes.
And man can never actually introduce fire from outside or create fire. But how did that branch sustain the fire without burning itself?
I think this is, in a way, this is a very Upanishadic example. And it is there, this example
itself
is there in, I think, one of the Upanishad. How the fire exists inside the wood, so also the Atma is there within you.
I think the 2-3 analogies related to fire. The fire and the burning iron ball. I think that is another very strong imagery in Upanishads.
Okay.
Where they say, you know, when you touch a hot ball, does the fire burn you or the iron burn you?
Okay.
I think so there's some, as you're saying, this even this branch and fire is similar to that. You know, where does the fire come from?
Yes.
If the fire was always inside, how it did not burn the branch, as Swami is saying here. And it's again, we have found different ways of making fire from other things. But I don't think we've found ways of creating fire. you know, what Swami is saying here.
Correct.
You know, we found the art of, you know, we strike these two together with
only
fire.
Generate fire.
Generate fire, but yeah. Creating fire, what Swami is saying. Even creating water.
That's why these are the five elements.
Right.
How can man ever create the five elements? Earth, fire, water, air, and space. How can man actually create any of these five elements?
And I think Swami is mentioning all of them. Even the earth, he started with that, you know.
Yes.
Swami says that man cannot create earth.
Yes.
He realized that he could not create earth. Mm. Then Swami is saying, and Swami spoke about wind.
Correct.
The wind is all pervasive, though he doesn't see it. Mm. He realizes that it's everywhere.
Yes.
Then Swami speaks about water and then fire.
Beautiful. So he says, looking at all this, man gradually started understanding that there is a power which is beyond and which is controlling this entire creation.
And then of course Swami mentions that, you know, it's a wonderful thing which Swami is referring to, because he's saying that even as man went about like this, he found ways of using nature to satisfy himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he started understanding nature more, but even in that understanding, there was this strong, recurring thought that there is so much more that I cannot understand.
Correct.
Hinting that probably that humility was what led man to, or, you know, gave man the ability to know more.
Very true. I mean, even for an artist or a musician, the moment they feel, yes, I know, I have achieved something, then the growth stops there. So in the same way, for a scientist, a person, a seeker, the more he is open and he says, I want to know, I need to know more. I think slowly nature reveals all her secrets.
I think I've mentioned this before, a quote in management. It's very, very profound and it's logical too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, today belongs to the learned man.
Okay.
But tomorrow belongs to the man who is learning.
Okay.
So if you consider yourself learned, you know, I know all that I need to learn.
Be happy with today.
Your progress, you know, stagnates.
Right.
Right. So shall we go to the next clip?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll go to the second clip in that discourse.
For any power, direct experience is necessary.
Kanuka, ee pratyaksha pramanamunaku yedi manaku sarayina satyamu ani kuda vicharistu vacharu.
He began inquiring into what could be the proof to find out direct experience.
ఇది మనకు ప్రత్యక్ష ప్రమాణము సూర్యుడే అని కూడా విశ్వసిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
He also firmly believed sun is the direct experience.
సూర్యుడే లేకపోయినా వెలుతురు లేదు.
Without sun there is no light.
కేవలం వెలుతురు మాత్రమే కాదు, ఏ విధమైనటువంటి సృష్టి కూడాను స్తంభించిపోతుంది.
Not merely light, creation itself comes to a standstill.
ఈ ప్రపంచమునందు ఏ వృక్షములు అభివృద్ధి కావాలన్నను, ఏ పంటలు పండవాలన్నను, ఏ జీవి పెరగవాలన్నను, ఇవన్నీ కూడా హైడ్రోజన్ అత్యవసరం.
ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఫర్ ది గ్రోత్ ఆఫ్ ద ట్రీస్ క్రాప్స్ ఆర్ ఈవెన్ లివింగ్ బీయింగ్స్ హైడ్రోజన్ ఈజ్ ఎసెన్షియల్.
ఈ సూర్యుని యొక్క ప్రధానమైనటువంటి శక్తి హైడ్రోజన్, హీలియం.
ది మోస్ట్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ పవర్ సప్లైడ్ బై సన్ ఈజ్ హైడ్రోజన్, హీలియం.
ఈ హైడ్రోజన్, హీలియం రెండు లేకుండా పోతే అసలు జగత్తే లేదు.
వితౌట్ దీస్ టూ హైడ్రోజన్ అండ్ హీలియం దేర్ కెనాట్ బి వరల్డ్ అట్ ఆల్.
కనుక ప్రత్యక్ష ప్రమాణము మనకు సూర్యుడే అని విశ్వసించుకున్నారు.
దేర్ ఫోర్ మ్యాన్ బిలీవ్ దట్ సన్ ప్రొవైడ్స్ ద డైరెక్ట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ యాజ్ అ ప్రూఫ్ ఆఫ్ డివినిటీ.
ఈ సూర్యతత్వమునందు అనేక విధమైన కొన్ని రహస్యాలు కూడా గుర్తించుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
మ్యాన్ ఆల్సో బిగాన్ రియలైజింగ్ a few subtle secrets of the sun.
Kramakramena gayatri mantram nandu ee suryuni pradhanamaina devata ga visvasistu vacharu.
Gradually in the gayatri mantra the secrets of sun were
diyo yono prachodayat. Suryudu prakashinchinattuga manavuni yokka buddhi kudanu amitanga prakashinchari. Surya prakashamu మన బుద్ధిలో ప్రవేశించాలి అనేటువంటి ప్రార్థనలు సలుపుతూ వచ్చారు.
ది ప్రేయర్ వాజ్ ఆఫర్డ్ దట్ మ్యాన్స్ ఇంటలెక్ట్ షుడ్ షైన్ రెస్ప్లెండెంట్లీ ఇన్ ద సేమ్ వే యాజ్ ద సన్. ది పవర్ ఆఫ్ ద సన్ షుడ్ ఎంటర్ ద ఇంటలెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ అండ్ షైన్ ఫోర్త్.
కనుక ప్రత్యక్ష ప్రమాణమునకు సూర్యుడే ఆధారము, ఈ సూర్య ఆధారమును పురస్కరించుకొని గాయత్రి మంత్రమును ఉచ్చరించుకుంటూ గాయత్రియే వేద మాత అని కూడా నువ్వు విశ్వసించుకుంటూ వచ్చాడు.
మ్యాన్ టేకింగ్ సన్ యాజ్ ద బేసిస్ ఆఫ్ డైరెక్ట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఆఫర్ ది ప్రేయర్ ఆఫ్ గాయత్రి అండ్ సెట్ దిస్ గాయత్రి మంత్ర ఈజ్ ది మదర్ వేద.
ఈ గాయత్రి కూడాను కేవలము ఒక కాలమునకు ఒక దేశమునకు ఒక పాత్రకు సంబంధించినటువంటిది కాదని.
దిస్ మంత్ర ఆఫ్ గాయత్రి ఈజ్ నాట్ కన్ఫైన్డ్ టు ఎనీ పర్టికులర్ నేషన్ ఎనీ పర్టికులర్ పీపుల్ ఎనీ పర్టికులర్ టైమ్.
పూర్వస్వహ మూడు కాలములకు కూడా సంబంధించినటువంటిది అని కూడా విశ్వసించారు.
దిస్ మంత్ర ఈజ్ అప్లికబుల్ టు ఆల్ ద త్రీ టైమ్స్. దిస్ ఇస్ ది బిలీఫ్.
తత్ సవితుర్వరేణ్యం భగవో దేవస్య ధీమహి ధియో యోన ప్రచోదయాత్. చీకటిని రూపమాపేటువంటిది వెలుగు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది లైట్ విచ్ డిస్ట్రాయ్స్ డార్క్నెస్.
వెలుగు లేకుండా చీకటి ఏమాత్రం కూడా మనకు దూరం కాదు.
యూ కెనాట్ డిస్పెల్ డార్క్నెస్ వితౌట్ లైట్.
కనుకనే భర్గో దేవస్య ధీమహి భర్గో ఈ చీకటిని రూపమాపేటువంటి సూర్యుడు ఈ గాయత్రి రూపంలో ప్రధాన స్థానమును ఆక్రమించాడు.
దట్ ఈస్ వై సన్ హెస్ బీన్ గివన్ ద ప్లేస్ ఆఫ్ ప్రైమ్ ఇంపార్టెన్స్ యాజ్ ద లైట్ విచ్ హీ ఎమినేట్స్ ఫ్రమ్ హిమ్ డిస్పెల్స్ డార్క్నెస్.
ఈ విధంగా ఏదో ఒక శక్తి ఉన్నదని ఆ శక్తియే దైవం అని కూడా విశ్వసించుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
మ్యాన్ బిగాన్ బిలీవింగ్ దట్ దేర్ ఈస్ సమ్ ఇన్విజిబుల్ పవర్ అండ్
క్రమేణా కూడాను అంకెలను కొంతవరకు నేర్చుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
గ్రాడ్యువలీ హీ బిగాన్ రియలైజింగ్ అండ్ లెర్నింగ్ నంబర్స్ న్యూమరాలజీ.
ఒకటి రెండు మూడు నాలుగు ఐదు ఆరు ఏడు ఎనిమిది తొమ్మిది పది
the numbers 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 10
ఈ 10 అంకెల లోపల కూడాను ఒకటే ప్రధానము కాని మిగిలిన అన్నీ కూడాను దీనికి భిన్న స్వరూపాలే.
In these 10 numbers the most important and primary one is number 1. The others are only different manifestations and combinations.
2 అనేది నంబర్ ఉంది అంటే రెండు ఒక్కట్లు చేరటం వల్లనే రెండు అయిపోయింది.
నంబర్ టూ కన్సిస్ట్ ఆఫ్ వన్ రిపీటెడ్ ట్వైస్.
తొమ్మిది అనేటువంటి అంకె ఉండదంటే ఇక్కడ ఒకటి రెండు మూడు తొమ్మిది ఒకట్లు ఇందులో చేరటము సంభవిస్తుంది.
నంబర్ నైన్ స్టాండ్స్ ఫార్ నంబర్ వన్ బీయింగ్ రిపీటెడ్ నైన్.
మిగిలిన నంబర్లు అన్నీ కూడాను ఒకటికి రూపాంతరములే అనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించాలి.
హీ రియలైజ్ that all the other numbers are variations of number 1 alone.
కనుక ఒక్కటే ఉన్నది ప్రధానమునందు.
Therefore number 1 is the most
ఏకం సత్ విప్రా బహుదావదంతి. ఉన్నది ఒక్కటే అయినప్పటికీ వ్యక్తులు దీనిని అనేక నంబర్స్ గా భావిస్తూ వస్తున్నారు అని ఒక సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించారు.
He realized that what exists is only one. But different people began describing this in different words.
దీనిని వేదం నందు ఏకోహం బహుశా ఉన్నది ఒక్కటే అనేక లక్షలు మిలియన్లుగా మారిపోతున్నది.
వేదాస్ ఆల్సో హ్యావ్ డిక్లేర్డ్ దిస్ ట్రూత్ దట్ దెర్ ఈస్ ఓన్లీ వన్ అండ్ ఇట్ మేనిఫెస్ట్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్.
ఒక్కటి లేక రెండు కాని పది కాని మిలియన్లు కాని కావడానికి వీలు లేదు.
Without number 1 you cannot have either 10 hundreds or even millions.
కనుక ఈ నంబర్ల ద్వారా దైవము కూడాను ఒక్కడే అనేటువంటి సత్యానికి వచ్చారు మానవులు.
With the help of numbers man realized that the truth is that there is only one and that is God.
ప్రపంచములో ఒక మనకు అతీతమైనటువంటి శక్తి ఒకటి ఉన్నదనియు ఆ శక్తి ఒకటే కాని రెండు కాదని కూడాను విశ్వసించుకుంటూ వచ్చారు మానవులు.
Men began firmly believing that in this world there is only one transcendental power. There is nothing more than one.
ఆ ఒక్కటే అనేక రూపములు ధరించి
that very one has taken different forms.
అనేక రూపనామముల చేత
with different names and forms
జగత్తును వ్యాపించి ఉంటున్నది.
It has pervaded ద ఎంటైర్ యూనివర్స్.
ఈ సత్యాన్ని పురస్కరించుకుని ఈశావాస్యం విధం జగత్ అని చెప్తూ వచ్చింది.
బేస్డ్ అపాన్ దిస్ పర్టికులర్ ట్రూత్ దే సెట్ దట్ ది ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ పర్మియేటెడ్ బై ఈశ్వర లార్డ్.
I think when this morning or yesterday when I was cutting the files, I didn't realize it was so beautifully placed, because the two clips which we played,
yes,
the first clip, the discourse part started with those words, Ishavasyam Itam Jagat.
Jagat. Mm.
And in the second clip, the last thing which Swami says, you know, literally derives that point, you know, how this
exactly
was declared by the Vedas.
It's like a scientific derivation of how man slowly, his consciousness raised, and how he started understanding the various aspects of divinity.
Right. Swami starts with that concept in Vedanta called Pratyaksha Pramana, where you believe in things which you are able to conceive through your senses.
Correct.
And first and foremost, it's sight. You know, you believe what you see. And Swami goes on to say how, for that, light is the very basis.
Okay.
You know, you can't see without light. You can't see in darkness. So when light is the basis, Swami goes on to say that the first source of light for man was sun. So sun was seen as the very foundation for this concept of Pratyaksha Pramana.
Correct.
And wonderful, you know, how Swami says, just like how you need the sun to see the objects outside, you need brilliance and the intelligence to see things in the right light.
Correct.
When just like how in a dark room you can't see see the color of objects or the exact shape of objects. Same way, when you're trying to understand through your intelligence, you can't see it in the right form if your intelligence is not illumined.
Yes.
And so Swami said, you know, Swami says the idea of the Gayatri Mantra comes. Well, it's actually a prayer for illumination of the buddhi. Dhiyo yona prachodayat, Swami says.
Correct. I mean, the Gayatri Mantra itself, Swami has spoken a lot about it, and then, you know, Swami would often say, while having your bath, you chant the Gayatri Mantra.
Right.
Just chant the Gayatri Mantra. And he said it has no time, it has no limitation, you can chant it. But putting it in this context is so beautiful, because he says the sun becomes the basis, and we are looking to the sun to brighten our intellect. That's what it is.
I mean, if you look at it, as Swami says here, sun was looked up as sun god himself. No?
Yes, yes.
If you look at it, so, you know, God who has created this entire universe, to give the ability to man to see all this, he has created sun.
Correct.
So it is like prayer to that Lord who has created sun so that we could see everything, saying that, oh Lord, just like how you created the sun, create illumination in my mind so I can see what you've created in the true light. And it's a very beautiful, definitely I've not looked at it this way. So wonderfully Swami is saying, and put in this chronological order, like how Swami has put it, you know, from creation, and how man starts wondering, and then how man realizes that sun seems to be the basis for his inquiry itself.
Correct.
His ability to see things and learn things.
Correct.
So then relating it to the mind, and then making this prayer. And one thing which you can see is, even when Swami goes on to speak about numbers, wonderfully, you know, Swami says how from number it says, never, I think, this quest through intelligence, be it science or be it mathematics or be it the other fields of knowledge. I think Swami is saying that in the Vedic tradition, always behind, the idea was to understand the ultimate.
Okay.
That's why Swami is saying that numbers came by, the mathematics came by, but even in that they're saying that what is the relation to this, how can I relate this to God, the ultimate understanding, my understanding of God.
Very true. You know, I think, I'm not sure where I read it or I heard someone say it, in the evolution of science, see, why is it called the philosophy of science?
Okay.
Because, they are so integrated. A philosophical point of view as well as pure scientific pursuit. They were so integrated in the initial days, and it was a church, it was an institution in itself. But slowly what happened, scientists started putting aside this aspect of feeling. See, you start concentrating on only what is perceivable and what is measurable and what is derivable. But then you bring, separate out the concept of feeling. Like, see, when you say the sun is giving its energy. Now, the difference between our ancients is they said he is a sun god. And here is a scientist who says, okay, it's a ball of burning hydrogen and helium. But what stops the Vedic scholar, what stops our ancient saying that is God as well? So, what happens? That the feeling of awe, the feeling of reverence, that portion started getting separated, and only the scientific pursuit where you try to map everything to basic facts. And it's the nature of hydrogen and helium to fuse, and that's where you get fusion and that's how you get energy. But who defined that nature? That's the point.
I think sometime back, a couple of months back, I was seeing a program on the television where they had two panels. All of them doctors.
Okay.
And one set of doctors were very strong believers. Mm-hmm. In fact, they kind of saw their profession as a means of worshipping God.
Okay.
Okay. And there was another set of doctors mm-hmm. who thought that there is no place for God in science.
Okay.
Maybe they're believers. It's not like they're all hardcore atheists. Mm. So the discussion was, what are the things which you come across in your life, in your profession, which makes you look at God and feel, oh my God, this is God's creation.
Okay.
The same things which these people spoke of, he said, when I look at the heartbeat, when we've done a surgery and when the heart picks up, you've stopped the heart from beating, you've performed the surgery and the heart picks up and the ability of the heart to continue like that. He said, where does that come from? Okay. So he says, I see God in that. But the same things which these people are referring to, the other doctors were saying that, this can be scientifically explained. This is what it happens. So unfortunately, that knowledge which was supposed to give you more understanding actually makes you feel, saturates you with the knowing and says, this can be understood. There can be nothing beyond that.
You try to find a logical explanation which discounts the necessity for a higher power.
Either it is understood by science or it is going to be understood by science. Nothing beyond that, that kind of a feeling.
Mm.
But as you're saying, where is the source of all that? Yeah, I can explain how the blood flows, but why the blood flows?
Exactly.
Where does your questioning suddenly face that dead end and you're not able to explain anymore?
Swami beautifully says in some other, I think it's a Telugu poem, who put the red beak on the green parrot? How beautiful. And why did he choose to do that? Which science of yours can explain that? you can describe, why this is happening. But you can describe how it is happening. But why things happen, you can never describe. you can describe this is how this happened, this is how this. But why it had to be that way? That science can never describe.
True. And that's the beauty, as you also mentioned, the ability to keep it parallelly going.
Yeah.
Your exploration of scientific understanding. At the same time, not forgetting that the ultimate understanding, what I'm trying to do is trying to understand the source of all this creation. And that's how so beautifully Swami brought it out in this mathematical thing. He's saying that, man started counting. After having found ways of making fire and making food and taking care of himself, or keeping himself warm, Swami says he starts counting. And then he realizes that 1, 2, 3, each of those progressive numbers which are higher than the previous one is nothing but a combination of that one which he first found.
Correct. In fact, one point which really comes to my mind here is, Swami often quotes Hiranyaksha.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he was the greatest scientist. He says people have, I've heard in some discourses a man has gone to moon, but he went to the sun. He explored. He went to the sun, and then he even says, what was his mistake? What was Hiranyaksha? Why he had to be annihilated? Because he started believing that he could control the elements. So that's what science is doing today. Unfortunately, you are trying to play God. You have got control over the elements. You have got control over the basic building blocks. But do you have control over life? So that's the question.
Exactly. I mean, the very idea, Swami would often say, you know, we've seen it enacted so many times in front of Swami, how Hiranyakashipu begins to tell his subjects that you have to worship me now.
Exactly.
I mean, it's all beautiful imagery.
Yes.
Here is, Swami often says, he's a scientist and he's explored all this.
Mm.
And he says, you know, there is no God, you have to worship me because I'm the one, because I can do all these things and I've understood all these things.
So you become a God.
Right. It's precisely what's happening to scientists today. You know, the little bit of understanding.
Mm.
That's why it's beautiful to see historically, there was a very close relationship to the unknown and man's devotion.
Okay.
It was very easy for a man to worship God as long as there was a lot of things unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And when the number of things known today are comparatively increasing, I think God seems to be out of context because there's so much seems to be, you know, so fast. The rate of knowing things has increased so much. You know so much now than 10 years, 15 years ago.
Right. And you start saying that, yeah, this is the law of nature and this is... this is natural, this is its property and this is what happens and that's what happens.
Yeah, you can give some cosmic theory or something, but who has conceived it?
Exactly. And so when Swami says that this is how our ancients saw and this is how they perceived that there is a force that is beyond us, and in that context he talks about the sun. He says the most direct experience every day is the sun. And so they started worshipping the sun as sun god. And next he goes on to the numbers and how beautifully he says, it is the one that has become the many.
Right. And then from there he says, that's where the Vedic dictum, that ekam sat vipra bahudha vadanti. You know, the truth is always one, but it is spoken of as many. And ekoham bahusyam, Swami says, that one becomes many. But the many is always actually multiples of that same one.
That's right. And, you know, it's amazing how Swami brings these, how man explored this and crystallized his explorations in the form of this Vedic dicta. Because when you say, Veda hametam purusham mahantam aditya varnam tamasam, so these are our ancient scientists, the sages were the greatest scientists. I mean, Charaka Samhita, if you see, he was a sage. Sage Charaka who did medicine. So, all the scientists,
all of them, right.
Greatest scientists were sages, greatest sages as well. Each one explored one field and they did that with reverence, you know, with humility, with devotion. And that's why they were able to achieve so much.
Right. And it's, as you're saying, total selflessness. You know, I think even in the earlier series we had mentioned, here are a group of individuals who have given up everything in life.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's why we revere them as sages or renunciants or Brahmins.
You
know, those who have given up everything else and they've pursued knowledge and they come back and say this is the truth.
Correct.
But we question it, you know, because what is given selflessly, there's nothing a person gains by my understanding his concept or not.
Correct.
And when he gives it, definitely there must be some amount of truth behind that.
Mm.
But we are ready to go by what the scientists say, which is not wrong. You know, this is again a thing, I think in this discourse or the discourses in the series, Swami mentions how truth is the very basis for science too.
Yes.
Like, you know, honesty is the very bedrock on which scientific understanding stands. You know, you can't cheat yourself. You can't forge your experimental results.
That intellectual honesty.
Right.
You not getting a result may be more important than you getting a result.
Right.
That's the point.
Exactly. And I think that is what Swami says, that they came to know so much. They
Correct.
Came to understand so much, but always they were honest with themselves, saying that there's definitely so much more to be known.
Correct.
And that unknown is still, you know, in the grasp of somebody who is superior to all of us.
Yes.
And dear listeners, just a couple of clips that we played today would have given you a sample of what this discourse is going to be.
And possibly the series as well.
The series as well, absolutely. Because wonderful, one thing is, the discourse is, Swami is not compromising anywhere. It's really the essence of the Vedas which is flowing through Swami's words. But at the same time, in such a beautiful logical flow, and as you said, you know, measured tone, yes, and a measured delivery, and really waiting to look into the rest of the discourse. But for that, you'll have to come back next week for the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Nirvidhyasanam. Till then, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Saiprakash. We offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet for this opportunity, and thank all of you for joining us. In a short while, we'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last program of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you. Happy listening.